You're listening to the On the NBA Beat podcast, a show packed with nuanced perspectives on the league's most important stories.
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant to Shaq.
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
Jordan. Oh, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan.
And now, your hosts, Lauren Lee Chen and the twins, Aaron and Joshua Fisher.
Hey everyone, it's Lauren Lee Chen, here as always with Aaron and Joshua, and we have another team interview for you. We're going to be talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves, whose young big three of Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Zach LaVine are all averaging over 20 points per game and are all under 21 years old. We're joined today by none other than Patrick Fenelon. Patrick can almost always be found giving his great Wolves analysis on Twitter, but when he's not doing that, you'll likely find him giving his controversial views on what does or does not constitute a sandwich. For example, he thinks pizza is a sandwich. Hey Patrick, really great to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The Minnesota Timberwolves came into this season with pretty high expectations, building from their young core, but they're off to a somewhat disappointing 2-5 start. That record's a little bit deceptive in that they've lost a lot of close games, and they're actually 9th in net rating right now. Are you worried at all about this start, or is that something you expect with a young team going through growing pains a little bit?
Am I worried about the expectations for this season? Yes. Am I worried about them long term? No. That's more or less how you boil it down. I think they should be 4-3 Pythagorean wins.
Sounds right, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they blew in their first two games, they blew 2 17-point leads or something like that in the third quarter. Just ugly. And then that loss to the Nuggets was just... oh, that was just gut-wrenching. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's really weird. As a Wolves fan, I'm used to the team finding new and innovative ways to lose. Now they're losing, like, all the same way. So I don't know if that's consistency or not. But there's a lot of good things, you know, when you're watching them that they're, you know, they're doing really well. It's just, you know, none of these guys can legally rent a car. I mean, they're not going to be consistent. So it just is what it is, and you just let it ride. Also, Rubio going down, that really hurt. You know, that hurts their depth at point guard, and it just hurts their defense. It hurts. I mean, team's just so much better when he's on the court.
I'm glad you brought up the third quarter issues that the team has had. If you just break down their net rating by quarter, they're the best team in the league in the first quarter. As you said, they're often getting off to these great starts, and then they're last in the league in the third quarter net rating at minus 35. It's not even particularly close. And I mean, it's still early, and that's really influenced by a couple really bad performances in that quarter in a couple games. But in your estimation, why has that quarter, the third quarter, been so disastrous in particular?
It's just, you know, you wonder if it's a weird quirk of just youth, you know, thinking that they can sit back and, you know, play prevent defense. And I mean, it's just a layup line really is what happens in that third quarter. If you look at shot charts from at least three of the games I've seen, it's just, you'll see one guy is coming in there and just getting layups over and over and over again. And it's just bizarre. They just stop playing defense, and, you know, then turnovers happen, and I don't know. I remember last year, the Celtics were great out of third quarters, just consistently out of there. I'm not sure if it's a Tibbs thing. I don't know what it is, but it's really strange. Hope it goes away. Blowing 17-point leads twice in the first two games. It's just, I don't even know how you do that. I don't know how you be consistent at this. I'm sure it's not that abnormal, but I don't have a good explanation for it. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, people say that these 15, 20, 17 twice point leads, they're less safe than you'd expect in the NBA. So from time to time it happens, but twice in such a short period is a little bit worrying, but probably not too much to pay attention to. I guess it's still early. The other issue you brought up, the Wolves have been dealing with Ricky Rubio's injury, which has thrust Chris Dunn into the starting lineup. Do you notice
that? Yeah. And Tyus Jones, too. He's actually gotten more minutes than Dunn, which is...
Yeah, that was part of my question, actually. Do you notice a drop-off when going from Rubio to Dunn with the starters and also giving a lot of Dunn's former minutes to Tyus Jones?
Yeah, with Chris, you know, I've been actually really impressed with Tyus Jones considering what my expectations were for him this year, which were really, really, really low. I still think he's going to be a legit backup point guard in this league. He's just so good out of the pick and roll and just such a smart player. And I've, you know, he's from here. People, you know, people in basketball around here have watched him for years. We know what he's just not. His problem is really just size. He just gets knocked around a lot, but he'll get bigger and he'll become capable. Dunn, you know, I've been really impressed with him defensively. He'll hold his own, right? He's held his own right away. He just doesn't know exactly what to do on the offensive end. Here's an example from a preseason game where he just thought he could get, you know, lay it up like he was still in a Big East game, and just a D-League rim protector came over and just swatted the damn thing away. It's a really steep learning curve for point guards. So what you notice when Dunn's out on the court is their offense is a lot based on trying to be scrappy on defense and then get a turnover and run the other way. I think their pace is a lot faster with Dunn out there. I mean, I'm sure it is, but it's a drop-off for sure, though. It's much less controlled.
Karl-Anthony Towns has been amazing, the reigning rookie of the year, obviously. He's been dominating in ways that you wouldn't really expect a second-year 20-year-old big man to do. What do you think is the most surprising thing you've been seeing from him, and what does he still need to work on?
I guess surprising is that, like, I don't know, he hasn't cured cancer, something like that.
He might.
He's perfect. I mean, he's perfect. It's real, you know, you look at his skill set, and this is last year. By the end of last year, you looked at everything top to bottom, and, you know, there's some lapses on defense just because he's not that experienced yet, but, you know, we had KG yelling in his ear, so that got fixed pretty well by the end. And it's, he doesn't have any real weaknesses in his game. But I guess I've been impressed by, I mean, it's just everything has started to get better with him. His rebounding numbers are down, but that's not his fault. You know, that's largely sharing the court with, you know, another center all the time. And more or less, like, you know, with Tibbs, you crash the glass just constantly. You know, he just demands you do it. So it's been picked up by other players too. So I think he's averaging 22-8. It's hard to say, like, you know, what he's gotten better at. It's slowly becoming everything. He's playing better within a team structure. He's not having to go to ISO to be the threat anymore. He can just be part of a team concept. It's hard to say exactly what's better because he was just so damn good at the end of last year too. I mean, he's playing at the level I expected him to play at, which is insane.
He's been shooting more threes this year, and so far his percentage from there is way up. Do you think that trend's going to continue? Do you see him continually shooting more threes? Or is this kind of...
Oh, he totally will. He will definitely take more threes. That was his quirk of Sam Mitchell's offense last year, where he said we didn't have shooters, but he made him shoot a lot of long twos, which makes no sense. And yeah, he's averaging 43% from three. Good Lord. The whole team, that's the number one three-point shooting team in the league, by the way, this year, right now.
Yeah. I was just about to ask you about Zach LaVine. It seems like he's been improving his three-point shot every season. He's almost shooting 50% from there this year. Do you think he's a most improved player candidate? He's been amazing.
Yeah, he probably is. He's playing better. Like, he's playing defense where he's not constantly out of position this year pretty well. And so that alone is, you know, he just needs to be not a huge liability on defense because he's just such a flamethrower on offense. He's not going to shoot almost 50% from the three for the year, but it might be 43. I mean, it'll be Klay Thompson level. He's that good a shooter. He was hitting him at about that clip for the whole second half of last year. Like, he's that good. He might get the award. I mean, I hate that award is such a weird award. I have no idea how to judge it. And
so many variables.
Like, right, CJ McCollum that year where he just had no opportunities. And then the next year he didn't get that much better. He just got so many more opportunities.
Because he wasn't as good as... Yeah, he wasn't as good as pre-Achilles injury Wes Matthews. And then, I mean, who was freaking amazing. Who was freaking great that year. And then suddenly he gets thrust in, gets lots of minutes. And he's you know, and then he has time, and he finally gets time to gel within a team construct. LaVine, if you know, the strides he'll take this year are, believe it or not, largely going to be on the defensive end, and that's just by being in position and just not. I mean, he looks like a lost puppy half the time last year. It was really bad. Yeah, it was. I don't think he liked playing for Sam Mitchell. I don't think Sam Mitchell's defensive scheme really worked very well. Oh, it clearly didn't work very well.
LaVine's definitely looking comfortable now. That's for sure.
He's comfortable on that. And, he's not a good defender. And I don't think he probably never will be. He just has to be competent and just he's got length. He'll still always get smashed on screens because he's really skinny. But still, it won't take that much just to make him, a really big net plus. And he so far has been that.
Another freak athlete, Andrew Wiggins, we haven't even really talked about him yet. He possibly the highest touted of all three coming into the NBA. He was supposed to be a game changer. Do you still see that for him? Or do you think he's better suited as a secondary type player behind Karl-Anthony Towns?
I mean... That's such a weird thing to say. I mean, I think, yeah, he probably, in terms of his mentality and just his charisma on a roster and in a locker room, and being outspoken, he's kind of going to always be secondary to Towns. Towns might be president of the United States, for God's sake. Like, he's perfect. I mean, just if you ever hear him talk, he is. Towns had a 4.0 in high school, 4.0 for his as a pre-med at Kentucky. He's continuing. He's perfect.
Yeah, he's magnetic. He just has that personality, charismatic.
Yeah. And Wiggins is just by nature really shy, which I don't blame him for being so touted coming out of high school. He's just very guarded. And but it's not just that. Manu Ginobili on any other team would have been a superstar and considered as such. But, he picked a different role in the Spurs. Obviously, they're very different players. Wiggins is not a playmaker at this point. And he's really, at this point, just a scorer and a solid individual defender. And he's getting better as a team defender. But I'm just not comfortable with pegging like roles like that. Because Wiggins is going to be the lead scorer on this team in all likelihood, regardless. By the way, he's averaging 64% from three-point range right now. I'm sure that's sustainable.
That's just crazy.
Outside shooter, right?
Do you know what what they did was they ended up hiring, his last name is Patton, and he was Chip England, the Spurs shooting coach protege for years, and that they hired him. And I think it's working because, Jesus Christ, this team went from being atrocious at this to just hitting everything.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I saw you said on Twitter that Zach LaVine's three-point percentage, you expect him to be near the top of the league by the end of the season. I know you don't expect Wiggins, obviously, to
sustain
that Wiggins crazy number. But, yeah, so you're really high on LaVine as a shooter, aren't you? I know you compared him to Klay Thompson earlier. That's high praise.
It's that pure a shot. It's really hard to overstate just how good of a shooter he is. When he's missing, he doesn't have a conscience and it's bad and you have to stop him.
That's why we do this, because you follow the team and we don't get to watch him as much as you do. So that's really valuable to hear that first person account of his shot. I think that around the league, a lot of people see him as an athlete who can shoot somewhat, but isn't that pure of a shooter necessarily.
Right. And, he'll never be a 3-and-D guy because that implies D. But, if you dig back into his post-All-Star numbers last year, he was shooting off-catch-and-shoots at the exact same clip as Klay Thompson for that whole season. Like, this isn't totally unprecedented going in. This is a continuation of what he did at the end of the All-Star break. This seems legit. Right. Just also, he was forced to play point guard going into, starting at all this. First under Flip, because Flip realized that, go in there and dribble left-handed if you have to. Just we need to lose some games to tank. But then Sam Mitchell decided that, despite flip signing Andre Miller, he just was never going to play Andre Miller and play Levine at point guard, and it just was a disaster.
Yeah.
And
more broadly, though, just about their three-point shooting. So we mentioned Towns, Levine, and Wiggins. Those guys are lighting it up from out there. But as a team, they're leading the league right now in percentage, over 41%.
Totally sustainable.
I was going to say not sustainable, but clearly they're a much improved perimeter shooting team. And the past five seasons, they were dreadful from out there. I'm curious, do you think that their three-point attempts should increase because of their success rate, or is their success rate so high because they're so discriminating with their shot selection?
What are they in three-point attempts? In
so they're actually 26th, okay. As before Friday's game. So near the bottom in attempts, but number one in accuracy.
Is that per game or per 36? Because they play a pretty slow pace.
Per game. So that's a good point that it's drawn down by pace. But
I mean, that's
would
just
you
tips.
Like to see, right? Would you like to see their attempts increase, or they're making their threes at a high rate, just don't change anything?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with their offense right now. There's just, I mean, that's not the end of, I mean, they're, I think, sixth in offensive rating, I want to say. It depends on if you're checking Basketball Reference or NBA.com, because they have to measure it differently. Yeah. But yeah, like, their offense isn't a problem. So, I would keep it steady, I guess, at this point.
By the way, NBA.com has them fourth in offensive rating as of now at 108.3.
Well, again, I like that more, so let's go with that. But yeah, I guess I would just stay the course is probably what I would do, just because what's really funny about their three-point shooters that are shooting well, Nemanja Bjelica and Brandon Rush are both shooting like 23% and 27% respectively, and those guys are, you know, actually good three-point shooters. So, and then you have Wiggins coming in and hitting 64% from there, who's, you know, never hit above what 31% in his whole career. So we'll see where all this settles down, but I would just stay course until you have an idea of what actually is their baseline, because this is clearly way above it. I mean, or else
we'll monitor it. We didn't ask about defense yet. Their defense is improved, but it's still below average, I think, according to the metric that I looked at of defensive rating. But Thibodeau was brought in, obviously, to overhaul the defense. Where do you see them on that end of the court?
You know, they should be really good. I mean, they, you know, long term, if they, you know, I'd like them to keep Ricky throughout his contract, because you're not going to get value back, but that's a whole other discussion. But even if it's done starting there, that's a really solid defender. So you have solid, really good defense at the point guard position. You have, and then you have Wiggins at the wing, and you have Towns at center. And then Jang's a meh defender. He's good at blocking for the weak side and rebounds well. But you know, they have the talent to actually be a good defensive team. They're just young and inexperienced and weren't coached within a decent structure at any point. I mean, take a look at Shabazz Muhammad and Gorgui Jang. They've had, you know, three coaches with three really different plans to play defense. And I say that because even though Flip and Sam sort of did have the same plan, I'm not sure if Mitchell ever kind of conveyed the idea of having a plan, and it was just, it was a disaster. But the, you know, there, it's just been in flux. And what you can tell, though, with Thibodeau is that he's got a long leash, and there's actually definitely a system in place. And he's supposedly just such a good teacher and will stop practice if you're out of position and break down. It's just a fundamental of just where you have to be and how to be there. And, you know, that is the way that you turn teams into good defenses. It doesn't happen overnight. You just have to get better at it as the season wears on. So it's something to monitor month to month more than it is, you know, game to game.
I want to know also what your general thoughts are on Thibodeau. And just a side note, we weren't really sure if it was Thibodeau or Thibodeau. We've heard both a lot. Apparently, from what we've read, he says Thibodeau, but Tibbs is his nickname. So I think either is fine.
Do you just don't call him Tom. Yeah.
Won't do that. Yeah. So what do you think about his presence now in the front office and on the sidelines?
See, he really likes an inside-out sort of offense. You saw it with Derrick Rose a lot back then. And so his relationship with Ricky Rubio is always going to be tenuous because and we'll see if Thibodeau adjusts to it or not, or just what happens with that. But in the front office, he's been really good at not making any bad signings. Every signing he did this summer was a good signing, and there's just no bad Cole Aldridge was a great signing for, he's a really good backup center, and he's getting paid like nothing. Also, he's from here, and so that's always nice. Brandon Rush. I really like the Brandon Rush signing. They just needed a shooter that can just be capable out there and just eat up minutes and beat, hit three-pointers from the corner. All this was done on just very little. The Chris Dunn pick, I can't knock a best player available pick. He's been great.
Summer League. He looked so good.
Right.
That's obviously a different level of competition, yes. but still. I mean,
he's so athletic, laterally especially. My God.
And played with so much confidence, too, when we saw him.
Right. It's almost to a point of you can get frustrated when you have expectations of this team. Like, this team hasn't made the playoffs for 12 years, so I really want wins. And I have to, calm myself back down that this is a process. And if a championship is the eventual goal with a core, you have to focus on the long term, of everything, and not just getting to the playoffs by all means this year. I've been actually pretty happy with his minutes, with how he's played minutes for guys. It's not been like what you saw in Chicago as much. Towns has the most minutes at 35 a game. That's not bad. I mean, it's a little high, but it's fine. Wiggins is 34. You don't see the 40 minute a game guys like you did with, Deng.
Do you think that's because they have more depth this year? What is their depth like, do you think? Certain positions weaker than others.
Right. Point guard depth is a mixed bag because you have a lot of talent, but it's extremely mixed on experience. Wing depth is, it's bad on defense once you get there, but you have some guys that can get buckets, I guess. Bielitsa is a really solid player, and I wish he would play more, but he's tougher to fit in as far as power forwards go. The depth is fine for a first line, but they can't really – if they took an injury, it would be really bad. It's tough to say. It's not they're not like the Spurs out there that we can just roll a team of bench unit out there and destroy you. They're just – it's just, adequate at this point. And it's kind of young, so they have a tendency to just really let up and just get beat on. But so do the starters. So it's all a mixed bag.
You started to mention Bielitsa, who's – I'm really interested in that guy. He's only in his second season in the NBA, but he's sort of an elder statesman on the Wolves team, especially. He's 28. He's even older than Rubio. Last year, it seemed like he did a lot of things well. He had a couple of breakout good games and where he really showed off how good he was in certain areas, but it seems like he does still have a lot of room to develop, maybe could get a lot better at decision-making, I'd say, adjusting to NBA speed. How would you assess where he is on his trajectory right now?
He's the best terrible long shot make. If you look at his shot chart, it's really funny because all of his 3-point shots are taken from 2 feet behind the 3-point line. Decision making is really an issue because he basically played point guard in Europe. And so he's always looking to pass the ball when, half the time you just want him to catch and shoot because he's good at that. And he rebounds well. Defensively, he's not a liability. He's not the best, but he's fine. Yeah, he's got a really well-rounded game, and theoretically should be the key to the start to be the starting four in a small ball unit on this team. But you just kind of wonder where he's going to go with it. and if it'll ever happen. So, yeah, I love I really love watching the guy, and he's a really, you know, he definitely came into the season in the best shape of his life. Yeah, I think last year, one reason he didn't play for a lot is because he sprained his foot during the All-Star break, like on vacation. And yeah, it just went downhill from there. So he played really, really well for a little while. I think the team sort of made some adjustments to him. Then he struggled a bit, and then he got hurt, and then he ended the season playing pretty well. So you see kind of one thing that you do see is, especially when Chris Dunn's in there and they're running an offense, you sort of see a bit of a point guard by committee thing, because you'll see Bielitsa largely be to some extent, you know, a really big distributor within that offense, just because the learning curve for Chris Dunn is so tough. And, you know, it is what it is. You see it less with Tyus in there. But, yeah, I like him as a player, and you just kind of hope he puts it all together rapidly, because he's 28. He's you know, 2 years into his prime or so. So he's got to do it soon, or else it's not going to happen.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to like there. The Gorgui Dieng, you were talking about him earlier. He doesn't get any accolades nor much respect, but he's solid. Nothing special on defense, but he's an outstanding free throw shooter, especially for a big man, and he rebounds really well. What do you think his ceiling is? Does he have much room for growth, or do you think he's going to be about at this level for good?
I think he can be a better defender, just because he hasn't played for, you know, with teammates that are capable of, you know, within a good defensive unit yet. So I think he's going to get better at that end. As far as, he's a really good mid-range shooter. And some like weird quirky stuff, you know, when the Wolves were tanking when his sophomore year, I remember he used the glass for, you know, a mid-range shot, and he was 70% on bank shots in the whole year. And, you know, it was a really good, decent sample size, and I have no idea why they went away from it. He's capable of doing it without it, but he's a really nice safety valve player on offense. And it's really, you know, it's not the sexiest thing to be the guy hitting, you know, shooting the mid-range jumper when they give up the pop. But, you know, you kind of got to, you know, you need a guy that can do that to take what the defense gives you when the shot clock goes down. So, yeah, he's solid. He got paid. Yeah, he probably could have gotten a lot more as a free agent just because teams are stupid and the cap's going to spike again. Yeah, but, you know, he wanted the security. He's 27. This is going to be, you know, the big contract. And he, you know, he couldn't risk getting hurt this year or anything. So, yeah, he signed with the team. He wants to do with this core, and that's great. I mean, either being the second or third big on this team, that's really solid to have. And it's not – I was really excited when they did it because I thought they were going to have to pay a lot more to keep him. But the more I think about it, I think it's just slightly under market value, probably how good he is. So it's fine.
Jang's definitely a steal. They're getting a good value out of him. But let me get your quick thoughts on Cole Aldrich. He definitely showed something for the Clippers last season, and he's a notable free agent addition for the Timberwolves, but he's only playing about 13 minutes per game so far. What do you think the likelihood is of him garnering more minutes and making a bigger impact moving forward?
It's got to be bigger. I mean, he's really good. I mean, he just is a really solid backup center. Part of it is, you know, he's just tougher. He's just kind of tough to slide in between Jang and Towns. Like, playing him next to Jang is just a problem, like, just because they're definitely two guys that play the center position and have trouble guarding fours. But they got to find a way for him to play more minutes, especially just, you know, he's such a good, like, he's a really good passer, especially out of the paint to make that extra pass to the corner. I've noticed he's really good at that. Just really solid in the pick and roll. Just a really good player. And, yeah, I think they're going to experiment just with what works on it. I can't imagine that number is going to stay that low. I mean, yeah, he's getting fewer minutes than Shabazz Muhammad. Like, that seems odd to me. But I know that Tibbs really does love Jang a lot just because he does lots of little things. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I'd like to see him in a bigger role. But I'll leave it to Tibbs. He definitely knows what he's doing better than I do.
Pat, thanks so much for your time. We'll wind down with this last question now. KG returned to the Timberwolves last season and retired in this offseason. He obviously had a long career before moving to Boston with the Timberwolves, which I assume you grew up watching him. Can you talk just a little bit about your memories about his legacy with the Wolves?
Yeah, I used to, after he left here, I used to always say my favorite Minnesota sports team is Kevin Garnett. He was that team. And, you know, I remember watching him in 2004. If you, I'd have to look up the numbers, but it's in a lot, by a lot of statistical measures, both offensively and defensively, it's like the best season anyone's had since 2000. Like it just wanted, it just astoundingly good that year. You literally, he was so good. He even played point guard after, Sam Cassell and Troy Hudson went down in the playoffs against him. They just had him play point guard. He was incredible. And just the, you know, the passion with which he played, you know, he made you really proud to actually like root for that guy. And it's, he's like, he is pretty much the reason I love the NBA, and he meant everything to me. It sucks that, they couldn't figure it out. I don't think they left on the best terms. I don't think, Glenn Taylor firing Sam Mitchell sat very well with him because those two are so tight together. But yeah, it had to happen. I'm glad he has a great relationship with Towns. So I basically, you know, I was a Celtics fan, you know, largely when he was out there. And yeah, it's really tough to put that in words, like your childhood just left. Like it's how, you know, it's how Lakers fans feel about Kobe, basically. You know, it's just, he was everything. It's, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, KG, Kobe, Tim Duncan all retiring this season. I think we're losing Paul Pierce next season. So
Ray Allen just retired too.
Ray.
My God, that Hall of Fame speech
Elton
is going to be
Brand. Sorry, I'll stop.
The Hall of Fame speech with Duncan and KG is going to be hilarious because those two hate each other just so much. They hate each other. It's mutual. It's so bad. So
hopefully they mutually respect each other too, or at least say that they do in public.
Yeah, that's, I'm going to go with the latter. Like they do, but they don't like each other at all. So there's that.
All right, Patrick, thanks a lot again for joining us today. Hope you have a good season.
Yeah, best of luck to you all. Take care.